Hello, happy new year, and welcome to episode 8 of Spirits and Spirits on a sunny December 31st, 2015. I'm Frank Todaro, host of the paranormal and science-based radio program, The Invisible World.
And I'm Jack Duquesne, author, herbologist, and whiskey enthusiast. So on tonight's program, we are going to have a year-end review. So we're going to take a look at some amazing gifts, the year that we've passed, the people we've chatted with. But also, in my recent time in Antwerp, Belgium, I snagged an interview with a lovely chef. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that and his boozy dealings. And then, to top it all off, we will also be doing a shot of the pumpkin spice whiskey from Sons of Liberty in Rhode Island. And we'll visit them in 2016. So
Guinness apparently wants to be on the New Year's episode too.
It wouldn't be an episode without him.
Yeah. And as Jack just said, she was away from me on Christmas. Oh. So we had second Christmas. Second Christmas was amazing.
It was.
She totally got me Masterpiece Optimus Prime. I was a happy, happy boy opening up toys on Christmas. Mm-hmm. And springboarding off of Jack's travels abroad, I will be discussing one of the biggest mass UFO sightings in history that actually took place in Belgium in the 80s and 90s. But first, it has been one heck of a fun year, and this project's actually turned out even better than I could have imagined, and I have a pretty good imagination. Before the ball drops on yet another year gone by, let's look at the show so far in 2015. Take it away, babe.
So episode one. So we went to Tuttleton Distillery, the very first legal distillery, about 12 years old now, in New York State. And of course, the beloved, almost amazing,
oh,
almost unmissable Bourbon the Cat. Who's amazing.
I think there's a video game that you play now, or an app, rather, that has bourbon guest starring in it, right?
A very white version.
Yeah.
But that's basically bourbon. Yeah.
Huge cat.
And amazing. I mean, 26 pounds. It's amazing. Anyway,
like mice were caught in its orbit. He would just sort of revolve around it.
Really, I know. And then all the pets. You could pet him for days.
So many belly rubs.
I know, Guinness. You're very lovely, too. So then we went over to Huguenot Street, the historic Huguenot Street.
Haunted historic Huguenot Street. Next, we went to our own backyard over here to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, where we went to Kings County Distillery. Tried a whole bunch of stuff over there. Spoke with Colin Spolman. That was a really fun interview, actually. He was a nice guy to talk to. Slid over to Admiral's Row, where we actually couldn't get in, unless we broke the law.
Which we didn't. Contrary to pictures that may or may not be out there, but I just want to say, don't do that. By the way, it's too late now, even if you wanted to do that, because it is officially that shopping extravaganza that we spoke of.
Has it actually been knocked down? I haven't been near there. Oh,
yeah.
Man. I haven't. We haven't checked. She checked, clearly, but are there pictures online?
I don't know. I don't know what the world has posted of a new supermarket.
Mm. Well, anyway, we also went down to Building 92, which you can go in. It's actually a lovely museum. Spoke with someone over there about ghostly hauntings. And
Monica was great. Definitely. Check our show notes and follow her endeavors. She was wonderful.
Yeah, I think there's a link to her stuff over there, too. And, of course, that New York Times article about a haunting not too far away. A really creepy one. Very high-profile haunting.
Yeah, so episode 3... We went to Oni's Rum and spoke with Bridget, and she was amazing.
She was awesome.
She's amazing and a really, really clever woman. That was super fun. Then we went to the Badunkadunk House.
The Badunkadunk House, right? The Vanderend Underdunk House. Now you got me saying it wrong, which I kept calling the Badunkadunk House while we were over there. And talked about Trinity School, which is that was a really cool thing to investigate. And we did finally get to go over there. We'll post some pictures up. Oni's Rum was amazing. I'm not usually a white rum guy. In fact, Bacardi makes me sick to this day. But, man, those daiquiris were spectacular.
Absolutely. And her entire history was really fun. I mean, with discussing and interviewing so many distillers, there's definitely a theme. People tend to have loved booze since some point in time in their youth. But they rarely have ties to actually Prohibition, which is super cool. I found her really fascinating. And her booze were good, which is always something fun to brag about.
Episode 4, we head back up to Beacon to Denning's Point Distillery, where we spoke with Carl, the mad scientist founder and master distiller. Just a really funny guy. Really nice tour. Really nice booze, too.
Yeah, he was delightful. Absolutely. And I love his Maid of the Meadow. We drink that often. I mean, Beacon's so amazing. I know we're going to end up there. We're going to probably end up there.
Seem to keep returning there. And at Denning's Point, and we got a coffee cup there.
Yeah.
Do you, you drink
yeah,
your
that says
coffee
there might be
of...
whiskey in here, and there's usually whiskey.
Indeed,
in there,
it's actually true sometimes with you in the morning. And then we spoke about the Newburgh Beacon Bridge and the wide array of UFO sightings that hover. No
Which
pun
is,
intended,
like,
around
that
area.
The whole thing about it is, like, I want to live in the Hudson Valley, at least, you know, relatively around there. It's a lovely place, but I don't really want to live in a haunted house, and I don't want to live underneath a UFO area.
Well, I mean, they didn't really, there's not a lot of abduction scenarios there. It's mostly just a bunch of triangles floating overhead.
Yeah, and I'm good,
technically,
though.
We're going to talk about that in Belgium, too, so either way, wherever you go, 601.
I guess. I'm just saying. Like, I like the house just to be a house.
Well, triangles are a way of life, you know? They're here. Get used to it. It's a modern era.
Magical, something like that.
Don't hate.
So, Maker's Faire.
Yeah.
That was a... We did a special episode between 4 and 5, which was lovely. We went and met the Pepsi Co. people in their new endeavor called Fizzology.
Fizzology.
Yep. And that was amazing. It was really fun. I can't wait to see that somewhere, whether it's a ballpark or whatever, if it pops up in New York. We'll talk to you about it because it was fun. It was fun and it tasted good. It was just such a cool concept.
And then I got to kvetch a little bit about not drinking and ghost hunting, which...
I know, right? I mean, our Twitter is Booze and Booze, but we don't actually want you to do those things together. I mean, you can talk about them together, but just moralistically, we're against, you know...
Oh, yeah. Even as you're saying this right now, I'm kind of itching to go off on a tirade, but just basically, I mean, this place, I mean, just the physicality of it, it's probably... dangerous to walk around. You should have your wits about you. Places that are haunted could be abandoned sites. Just, you know, have your faculties about you. Don't jeopardize yourself.
Okay.
Episode 5, we had a special guest on the program, an old friend of Jack's, a new friend of mine, Mr. Matt Thick, as our beer correspondent. Neither Jack or I really like beer that much, to be honest. It's just kind of like drinking bread. You get full too fast, and it doesn't taste so great, except some of them are really good, and a lot of those are found at Two Way Brewery, where we went and got a flight.
Seriously, and the fact that he made his own cultures, like, it's just really fascinating distiller. Or brewmasters, it would be, since... beer is a little different than boozies, though similar, you know? We're learning things, you're learning things. That's part of what we do here at Spirits and Spirits. We'll see Matt more with, of course, beer reviews around New York, but also some other things, and I look forward to 2016, the year that is coming next.
And while we were up there, speaking of time... Here's that segue. We went to the Pandorica, which is a Doctor Who-themed restaurant/tea house, and spoke with its lovely proprietor, Shirley, about the history of the place, and most importantly, Oliver the Ghost, a very specific entity that is said to inhabit the back room.
Yeah, and honestly, what a lovely time full of coincidences. Even if you didn't believe in the ghost that lived there, the coincidences were ridiculous and heavily laden as an engagement party came in and that just happened and it was so lovely. Like, the whole visit was so lovely.
Well, darling, as you know, there are no coincidences, especially when you're on a paranormal show.
Which might be why in the next episode,
hey,
when we went to New York Comic Con, which we would regardless, we found a comic book based on the history of beer, which was amazing.
First 10 minutes on the floor. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Lovely group of guys. Very talented. We've since read the book. It's hilarious. Easy. Though it could kill many bugs. It's huge. It's a monolith. But... it is.
So buy this book if you have a bug problem.
Kill a bug, read about booze. Win-win. Win-win.
Seriously, it is a great gift. If you do have any more last-minute gifts that you need to give to people you haven't seen yet over the holidays, The History of Beer, I believe is the correct title, graphic novel, or the graphic novel History of Beer?
Comic book History of Beer.
The comic book History of Beer is a perfect stocking stuffer. And finally, in the last episode, I went to Jolly Old England for another gig. Which you might hear about soon. And while I was there, I had the perfect Irish coffee and did a quick interview with the gentleman who made said perfect Irish coffee. And then Jack talked about essential oils.
And then you talked about essential oils.
We both talked about essential oils and the many uses for them.
And then, and which honestly, guys, if you care at all about making cocktails, and if you care at all about the actual content we give you, that is really an episode to listen to. Understand what essential oils are, or, you know, Google it. I guess you don't have to listen to us, but you're listening to us now, so chances are you
probably
want
to
listen
to us.
Yeah, listen to us. But no, really, essential oils are not to be put in your drinks. There's ways to do it. There's ways to make an amazing drink, but essential oils isn't it.
I honestly didn't even know that people were putting essential oils in their drinks until this episode, so I learned something, too. My wheelhouse was more so in the second half of that episode, where there are some essential oils that are used to enhance psychic ability, which we also spoke about. And I think we also prattled on and on about Star Wars,
yes,
which was up and coming at that time. Not so up and coming now, because it came and is here and is just a glory for the world to see.
Or is it? But right now,
we're
not going to spoil things. So, we're going to take this opportunity to talk about our intro and outro song.
As a spoiler warning for you guys.
So, people that do not want to listen to us talk about Star Wars because you haven't seen the movie yet, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Go see the movie. But for those of you that feel that way, we're going to play you the original of our intro song, and then you can fast forward till you hear it again, and then, you know, come back and join the episode. So, our intro song is a remix of Ray Charles' Hallelujah, I Love Her So, and the remix is made by Duddy Moonshine. Isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah, all right.
And Kid Casino.
Unlike real moonshine, I don't get sick from this one.
Right, so we're going to play a little bit of Ray Charles' Hallelujah, I Love Her So right now.
Before the sun comes up, she brings my coffee in my favorite cup. That's why I know, yes, I know, hallelujah, I just love so.
Star Wars, The Force Awakens was fantastic. I honestly, I can't express enough. I was sitting in the theater and I have to say,
it's dramatic background.
I like it. It's like glory hallelujah in the background as I sort of like recite my manifesto. It was amazing. I got teary-eyed multiple times. Me, a grown adult.
They had me at him purring. BBA,
no,
you
BBA
purred.
Purring.
I was done. I like if there's a table in front of me, I would have flipped it.
So we saw this movie on either side of the ocean. I was there 7 o'clock opening night with one of my oldest friends, brother to me.
And
I'm the godfather of his son. And Jack was overseas in Belgium.
I would have been up basically for about 30 hours at that point. I watched it. It would have been 2 p.m. on the Eastern Coast. It was 8 p.m. in Belgium. And it was a packed house there, too. But it had been out since Wednesday. So they had a whole day jump.
Wow.
So it wasn't as packed as what they told me it was the day before.
I gotta say, the second BB-8 rolled on the scene, literally rolled on the scene, and that little robot soccer ball purred, all I can think of was like, Jack is melting right now. She's done.
Well,
she's
I literally thought to myself, this movie can absolutely go downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And I will still always love it.
Roll downhill, if you will.
Ho-ho. So, I really enjoyed pretty much everything about it. I thought it harkened back to all the things I love, admitted crap I didn't, and was super fun. And I don't understand hate on the internet, so let's not even go there. But as far as I'm concerned, it was a good film.
You know, I kind of do want to address the detractors a little bit. Because there's this small contingent that don't like joy.
Mm-hmm.
On the internet, that they're saying that it's too similar to A New Hope, to episode 4, the first movie from 77.
But George Lucas
and
himself.
This is true, right? When there's an hour interview that's being thrown around. Does it even exist, or is that like
he's
a...
He's just got a
that's
bruised
gotta be
ego.
Something. We could
much like the
go
people
to
that
Snopes
are being
or something.
Assholes
he's
to
a,
Star
Trek. That's a robot.
Trek.
It's a droid.
A lot of angry,
well, let's not get
egos.
Into that, because Star Trek is not Star Trek anymore. But what moving on, going back to The Force Awakens... This is a movie that, while all of us old people nerds who love the originals have been reading the books and the comics and watching the Clone Wars that are technically geared towards kids, but we're enjoying the hell out of it anyway because there's Trandoshans and Wookiees fighting each other and it's awesome references to the originals. This movie isn't just for us. It's for everyone. And the original Star Wars is almost 40 years old. You need to recapture that magic. So why not use a formula similar to that first movie? Because it worked, and it got the kids excited. So even if it is similar, which I don't think it really was, I thought
what?
It was like cool. It wasn't slavishly
I don't even think, like, I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I just want to say, Frank and I both went to film school, so we might be a little ridiculous, a little anal about this, but the plot, the oh-so-similar formula of the movie is just a basic good action plot. That's it. So it's not redundant to reuse it. It's smart to reuse it. And it works for a reason. People like a story arc. People like to grow to enjoy the characters that they're watching. They like to see them struggle and conquer. And yeah, you could say that's cliche. Oh, he wins in the end. Sure, you can boil anything down to be that simple, but it works, and we relate for a reason. It's just storytelling.
Also, now that they've reestablished this status quo by introducing these characters, by having them do what they do, now you can do whatever you want because you've got the universe again. We've reestablished that Star Wars works like this, that it's awesome. And another thing that I kind of want to address is people were kind of weirded out as to where Maz Kanata got the lightsaber.
That's true. It's valid. It's one of the many small, not important, but small plot holes. You know?
I've got the answer.
All right.
Follow me. So Maz Kanata. First of all, that is what the Yoda species looks like, I think, when it's about 400 years old. They're not born looking 900 years old. So Maz Kanata wanted to have a kid with her then-husband, who was a Wookiee, because apparently she's into Wookiees. So she and her husband can't clearly reproduce because one's a Wookiee and one's a Yoda thing. So they go to the foremost fertility specialist, which happens to be located on the surface of Bespin. They walk into the place and they get this fancy machine, which has to exist in the middle of the Star Wars universe where there's so many different species that can fall in love with each other. But this machine takes the genetic code of two different species, combines them, or just one species, depending on the social structure of your romance on that planet, into a child, an offspring that you can have that's slightly different than you and you can raise as your own. So as they're walking out of this clinic on the surface of Bespin, lo and behold, a lightsaber falls from the sky with a severed hand clutching onto it, the hand of none other than Luke Skywalker. Splatters on the ground, some genetic goo gets onto the machine before they get a chance to use it. It whizzes, it pops, and out comes a baby Rey, who is Force-sensitive because she's made out of Luke Skywalker goo. Maz Kanata gets a lightsaber, a very sturdy lightsaber, as a consolation prize. There you go, Internet. You can settle down now.
Or, I don't know, start a whole new argument about how Maz Kanata threw out Rey, apparently abandoning her on some island.
Jakku. You know, she found good parents just like Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. Maybe even them. Maybe their kids. Maybe their progeny.
And maybe she's terrible then because they abandoned her too.
Well, you know, it's a human kid. How are they going to say this is our kid? Because one's a giant walking carpet and the other's a little orange eraser.
It's true. These are real problems in a real complex racial world.
I take it back. They should have raised Rey. You know, Maz Kanata, I lose respect for you. Why did you abandon Rey?
I don't know. So we're going to create a forum against, a fan page also against this whole situation.
Deadbeats.
Sirs.
Seriously, the movie was awesome. Go see it if you haven't.
Yeah, so yeah, final thoughts. I loved it. Obviously, BB-8 has won my heart, and I might just enter a room full of BB-8s and never come out.
It's the cuteness of an Ewok mixed with the capability of an astromech droid.
And kittens. Like, I'm the target demographic. I have no shame. I love memes. I love fluffy things. I love purring things. I love Guinness the cat. And they put it in an adorable, what I call drunk duck, of a droid. It's amazing. It's amazing.
And I'll say, on a final note, my favorite part of the movie, and there are so many parts of the movie to be your favorite, but my favorite is that when Poe gets out of his X-Wing, the first person he runs to that he's excited to see is BB-8. Because that's his friend, that's his buddy. And Luke and Han and Leia and all the guys from the original trilogy, yeah, they liked the droids, but they were never like, you know, I love you, droid friend of mine. And Poe is just so excited. Well, maybe Luke and R2, they have kind of a special bond, but he doesn't call him Goldenrod. He doesn't tell him to never tell him the odds. He's just like, it's my buddy. And then in the end, when like BB-8's all like, I got a piece of the puzzle too, let me do this. Poe's like, oh, hey, buddy, what do you need? Let me help you sneakily behind the scenes here.
I know. It's very adorable.
I'm a droid guy.
And then also BB-8 meeting R2-D2. Once R2-D2 finally powers up after he's basically saving the world again by creating the map.
Because
he's amazing. They shook. They shook. They were so excited to see each other, which definitely makes me go, BB-8, you've been around a while. Because why would R2-D2 be excited to see you unless he knew you?
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm so okay with. I just want them to like hang out and get excited and tell jokes and giggle. It would be amazing. I want to see that show. Do a show on that.
These two droids, can they share an apartment and not drive each other crazy?
It would be like The Odd Couple, but it would be C-3PO with R2-D2 and BB-8 ganging up on him.
The binary couple?
Well, I guess. Well, I don't try any. Whatever. Point is I think it's unanimous. We both loved it, and you should see it again. And if you are listening and you didn't love it, I think you might just not like the franchise much, which is totally cool. But if you're just going to half hate, I don't know what to do with that. I really don't know what to do with that.
So thank you, JJ. Knocked it out of the park.
Woo.
And now the music again.
Some more Ray Charles for you.
She kisses me and she holds me tight and tell me that everything's all right. I know, yes, I know. Hallelujah, I just love. Oh, hallelujah. Don't you know?
So, I recently went to Antwerp to visit my mother, go back to my hometown where I was born, and as we were wandering around enjoying the sights, I saw this wonderful little pop-up at Grand Markt 13, which is the Grand Market, it's a square, 13, and it's also the name of a restaurant. It had this delightful little pop-up bar outside, serving all sorts of different foods and drinks, all featuring Elixir d'Anniversaire, which means Elixir of Antwerp. D'Anniversaire is a French form of that statement. An amazing drink. I will show you a picture of it online. Elixir d'Anniversaire is one of my favorite drinks. It's a blend of, oh, I don't even know, like 80 different herbs made in Antwerp. You can actually walk straight to the distiller. They do have group tours, which is pretty cool. We'll be doing that, Frank and I, on a future visit. And it's amazing. It's an amazing flavor, and the bottle's absolutely gorgeous. It's always been gorgeous. Looks like an old, really a tonic bottle. Kind of like Saint Germain, longer neck, super cute. So I had to ask, because I was way too intrigued at why a restaurant would want to do a pop-up and then also infuse everything in Elixir d'Anniversaire, which is pretty obviously well-known and well-liked. They treat it like a digestive, so it's on every menu in Belgium as something you can drink to calm your stomach, kind of an after-dinner drink. But it's not commonly cooked with. So, amazingly perfect for me, but not common. So here he is. This is Shep Nobles, the head chef, who was gracious enough to give me a few minutes to explain this very cool endeavor.
Hello. So I'm with Sippa Nobles at Grand Markt 13 in the middle of, heart of, really, Antwerp. And he's going to tell you a little bit more about the very exciting kind of booze and food adventure he's doing here.
yeah. So we have like an event with nice drinks that we made with Elixir d'Anvers. Elixir d'Anvers, it's like a local alcohol, a local spirit. And to make this this cocktail, we need they used like more than 40 different kinds of herbs, local herbs. And we have on the roof of our restaurant, we have also a rooftop full with herbs in the summertime. So it's a perfect match, the building and the Elixir d'Anvers. And all the money that we make go to a special event that I'm going to cook for homeless people. So it's really a special day today, what we are doing.
So that's amazing. I love that you're giving back. I love that, I'm an herbologist, and so coupling herbs with my favorite alcohol, Elixir d'Anvers, and I come from Belgium, right, even though I'm very American. it's an amazing liqueur, very difficult to find in the States. So to see this with incorporated into food on top of everything, on top of such a good cause, it's wonderful. My hat's off to you. What brought you to this adventure? Why did you choose to do this year?
So I think it's like it's really necessary to do a few times a year something special for everybody who needs some help. And that's, it's almost the end of the year, so we have to hurry up to do another good thing in 2015. Yeah. So, it was our idea to do this, and in the 14th of February, so it's like in a small 2 months, it's like... 14 February is like a lover's day. We're gonna give Valentine's some love, Valentine.
Universal.
Universal, so we're gonna give some love to the homeless people, and voila.
I love that. And so for people that are in America or other countries, is there a way that they can follow you and what you're doing next? And do you have anything planned for the future?
Yeah, so actually you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We are Restaurant Gramarek 13. Actually, we became best vegetable restaurant of Belgium this year. So we are very famous about our vegetables. And our concept in the restaurant is like sharing. We like sharing with each other. It's like we have a lot of vegetable bowls in the middle of the table. And like, you have to share them with the people around you.
That's fantastic. It's something a lot of people in New York jump on, a very vegan bandwagon, mm-hmm. and some food that comes from it is amazing, but a lot of times, yes, the idea of just good food and sharing is lost for something pretty and tiny made of quinoa, so it's good.
No, I'm not a vegetarian chef or cook, but the thing is, I always start with seasoned vegetables. That's the base of our dish. And then I add some more vegetables, so sometimes meat and fish. But if it's not necessary, I don't add fish and meat. But we start always with seasonal products, mm-hmm. vegetables. And for me also, it's I like vegetarian food, but sometimes you need a big piece of meat as well.
Sure. Yeah, but that's good. Balance is appropriate, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I wish you so much success. How long will this be running here?
It's like every Saturday in the next month, so the whole of January and on every Saturday.
Excellent. So if you're local, come on out and see this. It's in the heart of Antwerp, as I said, at the Grand Markt. It's called Grand Markt 13. And anything else you want to tell our listeners before you go?
No, everybody is welcome. And let's share with each other.
Voila. Yes. Thank you so much.
So amazing, right? I mean, what an awesome idea to give back like that. I was really, really thought that was cool. And then if you happen to be in Antwerp, go. It's going to be there every Saturday through January. Just go check it out. Even if you just do the pop-up outside and you don't make a reservation for inside, worth trying. Absolutely amazing. So the Belgian gin culture, which was interesting as I was talking to other bartenders and different cocktail bars. Not that there's much. There's a whole whopping 5 now in the city, which is pretty hilarious, as there are 2,500 in Little Antwerp, 2,500 pubs, only 5 cocktail bars. So big difference. So some pretty interesting nightlife if you're running around. There's definitely plenty of pubs, a couple of cocktail houses. They're doing some cool stuff there, and we'll get to that later. But Maybe you want to tell us a little bit more about the other crazy stuff happening in Belgium, Frank?
Will do. So let me set this up. The year was 1989. A young Michael Keaton donned layers of neoprene and pointy ears to punch the Joker in the face, while Doc and Marty had no need for roads in a futuristic 2015, and the boys in gray hopped in a marching Statue of Liberty to do battle with the evil Vigo. The USSR pulls out of Afghanistan. President George Herbert Walker Bush makes history in a meeting with the Soviet Union President Mikhail Gorbachev at the Malta Summit to end the Cold War, and NASA launches Galileo from our tiny blue planet to venture out into the solar system and gently probe Jupiter's atmosphere. But back here on Earth, something otherworldly was about to happen. For that, we head back over to Belgium, where my better half here just got back from, for one of the highest-profile wave of UFO sightings you may have never heard of. It all started in November on the 29th. 30 completely separate groups, three of which were law enforcement officials, all reported witnessing something very strange. An enormous object seemed to defy the very laws of physics as it glided silently through the air at a very low altitude. A giant, black triangle. Now, I've spoken about this sort of thing countless times on The Invisible World, and there was a rash of triangle sightings all throughout the 90s. Some folks attribute this to the popularity of The X-Files, which brought the idea of silent triangles soaring through the sky to the forefront of public consciousness, so that when you do see something that you can't quite explain, your mind fills in the blanks. The idea here is to say that in the 1950s and the 1960s, when the media is filled with tales of little green men in saucer-shaped craft, the average experiencer would see something akin to that. However, in the 90s, people would tend to see something more on trend with what would be popular at the time. Basically, the phenomena is unchanging, but what people concoct for themselves to believe would. Now, the problem here is that The X-Files debuted in 1993. This sighting was 4 years prior to that. Now, more importantly, however, every report was basically the same, independent of each other. The groups claim that this craft was flat, triangular shape, with lights underneath. It was nothing new at the time, but rarely do we get a sighting that's so widespread. We'll get into that later. I mean, this is something that we're not going to see, at least on this scale, for another 10 years in Phoenix, Arizona. That's another episode entirely. Maybe when we go to Arizona to cover a distillery. What do you think?
I'm into it. Let's do that.
Wear lots of pink and teal. So this monstrous silent ship glided all over Belgium, moving from the town of Liège down to the border of Netherlands and Germany. These sightings would go on for months until March 30th to 31st overnight, 1990. Multiple unknown objects were tracked on radar, even chased by two Belgian Air Force F-16s. They were photographed. They were kind of photographed. We'll get into that, too. And they were sighted by an estimated 13,500 people on the ground, 2,600 whom filled written statements describing in detail what they'd seen. Following the incident, the Belgian Air Force released a report detailing the events of the night. Here we go. At around 11 o'clock p.m., at around 11 p.m. on March 30th, the supervisor for the Control Reporting Center, the CRC at Glons, received reports that three unusual lights were seen moving towards the southeast of Brussels. These lights were reported to outshine the stars, like they came from a craft, saying that they're that bright, and changing color between red, green, and yellow. The lights moved in tandem across the sky and appeared to be fixed at the vertices of an equilateral triangle. Again, a familiar story for most of us nowadays that look at the UFO stuff. At this point, Glon CRC requested that the Wavre Gendarmerie, I'm probably butchering that to the Belgian next to me, sent a patrol to confirm the sighting. Now, approximately 10 minutes later, a second set of lights was sighted, moving towards the first triangle. By about 11:30, they had confirmed the initial sightings, and the Glon CRC had been able to observe the phenomenon on radar. Now, that second set of lights that were reported, by this time they had come together themselves into a similar triangular formation, just like the first one. So after tracking these targets and receiving that second radar confirmation from the traffic center control, Glon CRC gave the order to scramble two F-16 fighters from the Beauvachain Air Base shortly before midnight. Throughout this time, the phenomenon was still clearly visible from the ground, with witnesses describing this whole formation as maintaining their relative positions while moving slowly across the sky. Witnesses also reported two slightly dimmer lights towards the municipality of Agezi, displaying similar erratic movements to the second set of lights. So that's three different things now. Over the next hour, the two scrambled F-16s attempted nine separate interceptions of the target. On three occasions, they managed to obtain a radar lock for a few seconds. But each time, the targets changed position and sped so rapidly that the lock was broken. During the first radar lock, the target accelerated from 240 kilometers per hour to 1,770 kilometers per hour, while changing altitude from 2,700 meters to 1,500 meters, and then up to 3,350 meters before descending to almost ground level, the first descent of more than 900 meters taking less than 2 seconds. Similar maneuvers were observed during both subsequent radar locks. On no occasion were the F-16 pilots able to make visual contact with the targets, and at no point, despite these crazy speeds involved, was there any indication of a sonic boom. Now, just an aside here, and you can look this up online, you're going to see several folks making this same observation of this movement, this crazy up and down that I just described here, which are corroborated by multiple sources. Now, these movements would have killed certain death for any human pilot that would have been in a vehicle making this type of maneuver, making this sort of descent and ascent really fast like that, would have been pudding with bones in it. That was kind of gross. Now, all the while, witnesses on the ground corroborate everything that was picked up on radar. They watched this happening. They described seeing that second, smaller triangle completely vanishing from sight at one point, while the larger triangle shot upwards very rapidly, just as an F-16 flew past. Now, remember, just as I said, neither pilot had a visual on either of the craft. So there's no visual, but they could pick them up doing this on radar. Maybe they were Klingons, who knows? Now, that radar contact became more and more sporadic by about 12:30 a.m., which sort of makes sense, as these things are shooting around like that. And the final confirmed lock took place 10 minutes later at about 12:40. This final lock was once again broken by an acceleration from around 120 kilometers per hour to 1,120 kilometers per hour, after which the radar of the F-16 and those at Glons and Samarzak all lost contact. Both locations on the ground, both planes. Following several further unconfirmed contacts, the F-16s eventually returned to base shortly after about 1 a.m. So this whole thing took place just about 2 hours. Now here's an interesting ending to this tale. The final details of the sighting were provided by the members of the Wavre Gendarmerie who had been sent to confirm the original report. Now they describe four lights. There's a Star Trek joke in there somewhere. Now being arranged in a square formation, all making short, jerky movements before gradually losing their luminosity and disappearing in four separate directions at around 1:30, a half hour later. Now, if you guys go online and search Belgian UFO sighting, you're probably going to immediately find this photo of a triangle with four lights, one at each corner and one at the center. Now, this was posted in April of 1990. Shortly after the actual incident. Now, since then, a man by the name of Patrick M., no actual name, just the initial M., came forward and claimed that this picture was a hoax, and then they said he wasn't him, and whatever. This could be because there's nothing else in the picture frame to reference where this ship was, the distance it is from the camera, which is how a lot of hoaxes are debunked, mind you. Also, there's this method of computer-generated trickery that existed at the time that is said to allow for the shaky kind of realism of the picture, but then there's one edge that's clean. You can really kind of go down the rabbit hole as to why this is not an actual picture. However, some still hold on to the validity of this photo, which we will post to the Facebook page for reference as actual proof of a UFO. Not that we're saying it's proof, but some people do. Now, a fun little addendum to this story. We here in the United States of America are not the only ones who shout false flag operation whenever something extreme pops into the headlines. 3 years later, 1992, Belgian skeptic Mark Hallett wrote an essay about the Belgian UFO wave, criticizing the works done by the SOBEPS. It's a UFO group up there, ufology group. He basically says that this group was spreading misinformation in the media, which promoted the longevity of this sighting. Now, Hallett's thesis is that the Belgian UFO wave was mostly a mass delusion, boosted by the work done by the SOBEPS. I'm going to call them the SOBEPS, because that's cute. The SOBEPS. Without going into too much detail, it was basically proposed that the idea was planted into the public's mind so that common and mundane occurrences would be perceived as the unusual phenomena suggested rather than what it actually is, kind of like what we were talking about before. But then that doesn't really account for the scenario described by all of those witnesses that were on the ground and how so many people isolated from each other reported the same phenomenon. Now, I wasn't in Belgium at the time, and I think you were 9 when this happened. So I'm assuming that you weren't watching the news too much here, right?
No. I mean, there's Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch and bouncing on my parents' bed. That happened. Yeah, and then,
paranormal.
There's KLF.
They did a Doctor Who song, though, so that's kind of
Justified
related.
Ancient is kind of...
And KLF is going to rock y'all. Yeah.
Mufu Land. So, that's it, though. Sorry.
People have been debating whether or not something was seen, or if this was a prolonged mass delusion propagated by the media, which latched onto whatever the latest buzz at the time was. However, I want to propose that under the assumption that there was an object that was seen by many people, I mean, that those 30 groups of civilians and police that witnessed this were not subject to some sort of matrixing of information that they would have otherwise dismissed, that object doesn't have to be an alien. I know that's not really fun to talk about on a show called Spirits and Spirits, but the TR-3A or TR-3B, whichever you want to say, the TR-3 craft, something you might have heard of, speculated anti-gravity surveillance craft allegedly being developed by the U.S. military, particularly the Air Force, which fits the description of this craft in general terms. There have been many sightings of these mysterious sort of flying wing triangular things, various parts of the California desert. Now, again, this is Spirits and Spirits. I'm already kind of using the location of Jack's segment in Belgium to sort of segue into UFO lore, so I won't go too far into black projects and whatnot here. Go listen to The Invisible World if you want to hear that stuff. I'll just say, cool, while drones are commonplace now and all over the news and especially in the last few years, we hear a lot about drones. Back in the late 80s, people assumed that if you looked up and you saw an aircraft, there would be people inside of them. Whatever you see overhead probably has a person inside of it. Whatever you see in the sky now, well, the man-made things at least, has been in development for decades. Imagine how many UFO sightings have actually been craft that we're familiar with now, but just not then. And when you don't have to worry about something as soft and squishy as a human inside, that can allow said craft to do some pretty amazing things. That said, from the way this sighting is described and the way the object moves, our understanding, or I guess to correct that, our public understanding of aircraft technology is not really there yet. Not by a long shot. So who knows what glided over the land of chocolate and tasty mayonnaise 2.5 decades ago. Not us, for sure. But that is what makes it a mystery. Jack, you spent some of your childhood bouncing back and forth between the U.S. and Belgium. Were you there at the time of the sighting, 1989?
I was, but, you know, beyond what I mentioned, nothing really to remark on. I had no idea. I don't even know if my family had any idea. However, I will say, I find it amazing how many accounts there are. I don't know of anything else that has that kind of quantity of accounts. And on top of which, just the, beyond the amount, just the idea of it. And knowing Belgian news, which, might I add, when we were looking this up, I Googled VTM and some other news channels because I can read Flemish. And there's, like, from a month ago, they have right there on the news a UFO sighting. And they aren't making it a joke. They're just reporting it. This has happened. We don't know what it is. So I'm pretty sure that all of the news interactions with this event were very just factual. This is what we know. This is what we don't. And we're telling the country. So that's pretty cool.
This has been one of my favorite classic sightings of a UFO. Up there with the Rendlesham incident and Roswell and all that stuff. It's pretty neat. The other thing is, like you mentioned, other countries have very different tactics about reporting UFO sightings. I mean, someone throws a bottle cap across the room and the Russian news extols UFOs have finally landed. And in America, we're a laughingstock. So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in Belgium, it's just the news. So I think it's interesting. Different cultures, different things. But regardless, they all seem to be reporting similar news stories. And that's really cool. It's all kind of connecting whatever commonality or truth, if you will, since we can't quite exactly ever know, at least not yet. But I like that. I like that commonality.
And I am about to take a sip of this delicious elixir d'anniversaire from Belgium, the home of flying triangles, not too dissimilar from the Newburgh Beacon Bridge, also the home of flying triangles. Cheers, my dear. Speaking of booze or spirits or whatnot,
so let's,
tis the season, right?
Yeah, let's talk some gift sets.
Gift sets.
So, yeah. I love gift set season. This was something I got to share with Frank, and of course you guys, our listeners. It's something I think I might be one of the few people that gets super excited and runs to the liquor store to look at what kind of crap they've boxed together with my favorite booze.
She's not just saying that. We've done that on several.
I'm always like, let's go.
Basically,
here.
Every store we pass.
It's my Christmas shopping.
I like Transformers. You like
booze,
flasks
yeah.
with crappy logos.
So we took a bunch of photos of what the new offerings were this year. You can catch them along with that UFO photo online. But I'm going to briefly go through what we saw, and then we'll talk about our favorites. So Jägermeister this year has a tiny Jägermeister logoed flask. It's very cute, actually.
It's like a tiny flask.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, that's... Yeah. It fell out of the casing, but whatever.
It's short.
Frangelico has Frangelico glasses. A lot of just plain kind of scotch glasses going with these things. My favorite as far as glasses went was the Grey Goose. Grey Goose Vodka had really lovely, nice-shaped martini glasses. More classic throwback. Looks like a 3-ounce glass. Very cool.
Now, years ago, I had actually gotten one of these box sets, the Grey Goose Vodka, and I'm not really a vodka guy, but the glasses it came with had this pewter base to it that was kind of sculpted to look like a tree of some sort. I don't know why Grey Goose would have a tree at the stem of their glass, but it was really pretty. It was kind of a like pewter and glass.
Belvedere?
Absolutely sure. Never got a Belvedere before.
But it was vodka.
The glasses were lovely. And they broke immediately because you should never weld metal to glass in the way that they did.
Oh, that's a shame. Well,
yeah, they lasted long enough. They were nice, though.
Yeah, and I mean, the cool thing about these kits is you're going to buy this bottle of alcohol for the most part anyway. If you're looking at it, let's say it's Bailey's, let's say it's Jägermeister, vodka, whiskey. You're going to buy that anyway. It's the holidays you're drinking. You're going to bring it to a friend's house or you're going to buy it for yourself. Why not get some beautiful glasses with it or a new shaker or, ice stones, whatever. Like, there's all sorts of things they end up doubling up with these kits. So, moving right along, Kettle One, you guessed it, had Kettle One embossed glasses. Liqueur 43.
Those are pretty.
Yeah, these are very cool. They're big, bulbous tasting glasses. Now, Liqueur 43 is a tequila, but it's not a straight tequila. It's a very, very, very sweet liqueur made in the same way that tequila is made, but of course made into a liqueur, so there's heavier syrups. Very nice stuff. I'm here to tell you my mother's crazy for it. It's a big deal in Europe. I did not know that, but now I do since I've been there.
Now I know what to get your mom next year.
Yeah, right. Gozio. This is an Amaretto, very nice. It's a more refined Italian Amaretto. Has embossed glasses. Kahlua, embossed glasses. Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey has the most adorable highball glass with a little bee on it. Too cute. But only one, which I'm always frowning upon because I feel like I'm not going to spend, I mean, I'm not going to buy two bottles, especially of a honeyed liqueur.
Well, you get that one for really lonely people.
Yeah.
That's Fox Mulder's Christmas present.
Yeah, there you go. Chivas has embossed glasses. Remy Martin, embossed glasses.
Or one embossed glass, Hypnotic, another lonely one.
Which just don't ever drink that, really. But, you know, you could, but I wouldn't.
Looks like Aftershock.
Yeah, it's a blue, shiny embossed glass.
Mm.
Now, this was my favorite as far as embossed glasses go, is the Bailey's Irish Cream comes with four freaking adorable tasting glasses that have little gold and silver baubles on it and the embossed Bailey's logo, which is kind of the B forwards and backwards. It's super cute.
It reminds me what I got you last night.
Ah, the Irish Cream Kerry's. Kerry's Gold. So good. So good. So Kerrygold is a butter that Frank and I really enjoy. Nice Irish butter. And their Irish cream is so good. Ochterschwan, which I think I butcher every time I say it because that is a weird-ass name. Single malt Scotch whiskey has a really nice set of the American Oak, the 12-Yeard, and the 3-Wood. Very cool small bottle set. The St. Germain's has the pitcher again, which they've had this multiple years. I think it is an amazing set because that pitcher is just as long and sleek as the St. Germain's bottle. Totally cute. Really nice gift. Basil Hayden comes with a very attractive shaker, which actually rivals the Crystal Skull with also a shaker with a silly skull on it. Hennessy has a pull-out part of the box that it comes in to actually show off these beautiful glasses. Very nice. And then we've got Johnny Walker Black Label, which is also silver label, red label, and gold label. Really nice set. Comes together in a tiny black box. Very cool. For those of you looking for something lighter, Absolut Vodka does a flavor selection, which I believe these are 8-ounce little bottles of multiple flavors of their vodka. Popping around Marshall's and just about everywhere you can find other types of gifts, from books to silly things about booze. I've thrown some pictures up. Notably, in Marshall's, actually, I found something that's kind of funny. You can get these little kits that are basically things you can decorate your wine cork with, which is funny because Frank, when I first met him, decorated our wine cork with bits and bobbles of like a safety pin and a paper clip and made it a puppy with some pens. It was like the cutest thing, and I still have it around here.
I think he made a couple robots.
I know, right? And this was like something you just did. And apparently somebody said, oh, that's a great idea. I think I will box it and sell it.
We should litigate.
Right?
Guinness, what do you think? Guinness says meow.
It's very truthful, Guinness.
Buddy boy, what's the matter?
So Lauren Cook, our literal whiskey scotch correspondent, as in that she lives in Scotland and she's a delight, she sent us a few things she found that were really quite something. So I don't know if you're familiar with the crackers that they use. And by that, I don't mean a thing that you can spread cheese on and eat. I mean a thing that is for holidays. It's kind of a favor, kind of like a popper. You pull on both sides and out is a small explosion, and then little gifts, a funny crown comes out. Well, she sent us one of these that has how to make a drink. It's absolutely adorable. This one is to make a whiskey toddy. And inside of the popper is ginger root, lemon zest, cassia bark, cloves, allspice, everything you would need to just mold this into whiskey and make some whiskey toddies. And how cute is that? Very, very clever gift.
She also sent me a book of Scottish ghost stories, so thanks a lot.
Well, hopefully we get to cover some of that when we go to Scotland. Dig them up, see what's really going on. We may not literally dig them up, but, you know, see what they're about in their actual locations. From my dearest Aunt Linda, I got Uncorking the Past, which has quickly become one of my favorite books. Really interesting look back into why alcohol, what alcohol does to the body scientifically, and the origins therein. Really cool book. That's by McGovern. You can get that in any house. It's a University of California Press. So UCPRESS.edu. Really cool book. I recommend it. Now we got a whole list of books that you should purchase. We'll put pictures of those up online. Recently acquired, thanks to Frank, I got the PDT cocktail book. PDT, or Please Don't Tell, is a speakeasy bar that's been a staple of the movement that happened right here in New York City. So they've put out a really cool book. Goes over a lot of the basics, but then overall of their really very unique signature drinks that have started there, some of which are now across the nation. So it's a pretty cool book. Thank you. So now I've got books on moonshine, books on distilling and infusing. I mean, basically, if there's anything you have a curiosity for, you can find a book on it, which is pretty great. Because I love a reading.
That moonshine book was an afterthought when I got it, because I'm not a big fan of moonshine. Or at least, I haven't had the moonshine that's going to change my mind. So if you hear of one, or if you know of any place that we should visit that will change my mind, shoot those emails over to spiritsandspiritshow@gmail.com.
Well, you know, it's just like with vodkas. I think the thing with moonshine is we're talking about a clean, white alcohol with minimal flavoring beyond what it's flavored with at its root. So if you don't like the flavor of that pure aspect, which makes sense, not a lot of people do. That's why we flavor things. That's why we age them. We create deeper, deeper, more complex palates with them. Because a straight spirit is it's burny, it's caustic, so you got to really distill it for it to be anything.
I don't know how you can call something clean that has chunks of corn and cellulose floating around in its cloudy, viscous demeanor. It's not really clean, but that's
the
stuff we went to distillers and they said this is better. It's just white whiskey, and that's great. And some people must love that weird, sweet, St. Ives special brew kind of flavor that it has there, but not me. Leave it in a little bit longer, turn it into whiskey, and I think that's probably a lot cleaner.
You're also reacting to corn, which is such a weird flavor. And I totally agree. You got to like that or not. And I've had situations where corn, and even to be fair, certain types of gin, because of the herbs they use, have really been like, whoa.
Which is why I say, if you guys have one that you think that I should try, shoot it on over.
So, I want to say a big thank you to Lauren for that hot toddy cracker. We're going to enjoy that. And to my aunt Linda for the amazing literature. Totally going to read that. And then she got me a new bartender compiladium. So that'll be fun. I'll share with you guys, the listeners, if something strikes my fancy. But moving on, I want to thank my Aunt Nancy, who went and visited Sons of Liberty Distillery, where she was completely impressed with them. And then she saw a pumpkin spiced whiskey and thought of us, as she should.
That I am excited for.
So I'm going to crack this open now. We're going to give it a try. And see what we think. Okay, so here we are. Hey, to a happy new year and an amazing 2016. And to all of you listeners out there, the same.
That is much less sweet than I thought.
Ooh, I like it. There's, That's nice. Mm. So if there's a cloveness and a cinnamon that comes up behind.
Yeah.
The forefront is a very light whiskey. And then it kind of wraps you in cinnamon, clove, and like nutmeg.
You know, I get that when I smell it, but drinking it, Now, I half expected this to be like a pumpkin spice version of the sapling, which tastes like maple. And it's kind of sweet and syrupy. This is not sweet at all. And actually does have kind of a weird pumpkin. Not so much the spices that you put in pumpkin, but pumpkin, period. Period. Just pumpkin.
I really like it. Well done, sirs. Or madams. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, it's good.
Yep. So, as we enjoy this, we have a special treat or disservice. I'm not entirely sure what that is, but we're going to sing for you guys. We're doing this. And we apologize, and you're welcome. It's a simultaneous thing. We'll see where you land. It's all good. But before we do our send-off, our toast to you, I want to say follow our Facebook. We have one of those at Spirits and Spirits Show at facebook.com. We have a Twitter at Booze and Booze. And we have an Instagram at Spirits and Spirits. You see a trend here. We have a website at spiritsandspirits.net. So just check us out. Please like us. Please share our show if you enjoy it. And we will be back in a couple weeks with more Spirits and Spirits. But also, while you're busy being so kind to us with your likes and your sharing, look back at The Invisible World, which is amazing. And if you like anything that we talk about with paranormal, I mean, that's the best. That's the spot for it. And that will be out. And it has also multiple pages that I will let Frank tell you about.
Thanks. Yeah, The Invisible World is coming back kind of revamped here. New music. We're actually going to have a music episode first. And after that, we're going to be a special on mysterious broadcasts. And then a very special guest coming on after that. So the first three or four episodes have been plotted out, partially in the can. So theinvisibleworld.info, or check us out on Facebook, The Invisible World Show. There you go. I can't believe you're making me do this.
I love it. All right. We apologize, and you're welcome.
Let's do the old lyrics.
All right, let's do the old lyrics.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
Whoosh.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of lang syne? For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for auld lang syne.
Now gets weird. We tway hey run about the brace and put the gowans fine.
Talking about the gowanus?
Yeah,
like
I guess.
Canal?
I don't even know.
We yonder lonely weary foot sin auld lang syne. We tway had paid in the burn frey morning sun till dine, but seas between us braid hay roared sin auld lang syne.
It's like we're screaming Leonard Bernstein.
And there's a hand my trusty fear, and he's a hand to
thine. I guess that was the end of this music here. We're, you know, there's probably a lot more on this, but yeah. I think this is probably the end there.
Anyway,
Happy
thanks,
New
guys.
Year, everyone!
Happy New Year!
Everybody asked me how I know. I smiled at them and said she told me so. Everybody asked me how I know. I smiled at them and said she told me so. Everybody asked me how I know. I smiled at them and said she told me so.